Hi, this is Ruth McCauley returning with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, March 24th. We begin this half hour with some of the recent deaths in the Decatur area. Beginning with Virginia Heron Jenny Cannon, 85, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, March 19th at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Memorial services will be announced for a date in May, to be handled by Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Memorial donations may be made in Jenny's name to the Decatur Park District the Decatur Park District Foundation. Margaret L. Long, 92, of Clinton, passed away at 8:48 a.m. on March 21st at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal. Services will be held tomorrow at 1 p.m., that's Friday, March 25th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with J. Kent Hickerson officiating. Burial will follow in Mausoleum Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be held this evening from 5 to 7 p.m., that's Thursday, March 24th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorial donations in Margaret's name may be directed to the First Christian Church or to a charity of the donor's choice. Tammy Wood McGeorge, 53, of Neoga, formerly of Decatur, died on January 19th, 2016. Memorial services will be held at 5 p.m. this coming Sunday at Prairie Avenue Christian Church. I'm assuming that's in Neoga, with visitation 1 hour before services in the church. James A. Nottingham, 53, of Macon, passed away on Tuesday, March 22nd at St. Mary's Hospital. A memorial service to celebrate Jim's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Monday, March 28th at New Life Tabernacle in Macon, with the pastor Eric Ginder officiating. Or maybe that's Ginder, G-I-N-D-E-R. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 1 to 2 p.m. on Monday at the church. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be directed to Jim's family. Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Macon is assisting the family with the arrangements. David Wayne Reed, 45, of Sullivan, passed away at 5:40 p.m. March 20th at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Services have been held already today, March 24th, at the Texas Christian Church in Clinton, with Scott Marsh officiating, and burial was scheduled to follow in Texas Township Cemetery. Visitation was held last evening. Memorials may be directed to the Moultrie County Beacon or to the Texas Christian Church. Maddie Mae Tyus, 80, of Decatur, departed this life on Wednesday, March 16th at Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family by her side. Service of tribute and celebration will be held at 6 p.m. on Friday, that's tomorrow, March 25th, with visitation an hour prior to that service. Homegoing celebration will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 26th. Services will be held at Community Temple Church of God in Christ, 759 South Jackson Street, and her final resting place will be the Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services have been entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Julia Marie Brossend, 73, of Decatur, passed away on March 20th in her home surrounded by her family. There will be no public services as Julia wished to be cremated. A A private memorial service will be held at home at a later time. Tanzius Logan Funeral Home assisted the family with the services. If you wish to donate on her behalf, please do so to your local animal shelter or to the Parkinson's Foundation. Anita L. Buckner, 61, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, March 19th, at McKinley Court Care Center. A service to celebrate and honor Anita's life will be held at 12 noon on Saturday, March 26th, at New Salem Baptist Church, 352 West Wood Street in Decatur. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until the time of the service. She will be laid to rest at Greenwood Cemetery. Memorials can be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home is assisting the family with the arrangements. Alfred Levine Burkett, 88, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, March 18th, in Fairhaven's Christian Home. Honoring Al's wishes, cremation will take place at Graceland Fairlawn Crematory. There will be no public services. A private burial will be held at some time in the future in Graceland Cemetery. Linda Heffington, 72, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, March 20th, in her home, surrounded by her family. Services to celebrate Linda's life will be held from 11 a.m. on Friday, will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, March 25th, that's tomorrow, in Graceland Cemetery. Visitation will be held this evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Memorial donations are recommended to the Cancer Care Specialists of Decatur. Neil E. Pistorius, 95, passed away peacefully at home on March 14th. A service to celebrate his life will be held on Monday, March 28th, at 11 a.m. at Zion Chapel United Methodist Church in Boody, Illinois. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur are assisting the family. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Richland Community College Foundation for the Neil E. and Helen W. Pistorius Scholarship Endowment, 1 College Park, Decatur, Illinois, 62521, or to Zion Chapel United Methodist Church Memorial Fund, Post Office Box 11, Boody, Illinois, and that's B-O-O-D-Y. Illinois, 62514. Juanita Kumi Turney, 92, of Clinton, passed away on Sunday, March 20th at Liberty Village in Clinton, surrounded by her family. Services to celebrate her life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, March 25th, at First Christian Church of Clinton. Visitation is scheduled to be held this evening from 4 to 7 p.m. at the church. Burial will take place at Oak Park Cemetery. Memorial donations may be directed to Little Galilee or First Christian Church of Clinton. Timothy D. Tim Hendricks, 52, of Findlay, Illinois, died at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday, March 19th. Graveside services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, March 25th, in Glenwood Cemetery in Shelbyville, with Richard Hargrave officiating. Memorial donations may be made to the American Diabetes Association or to the American Heart Association. Arrangements are being handled by Howe and Yockey Funeral Home in Shelbyville. Jim Horstkamp, I'm sure I didn't say that right. It's H-O-R-S-T-H-E-M-K-E. 69 of Pana, died on Saturday, March 19th. Services will be held tomorrow at noon at the McCracken Dean Funeral Home in Pana, with Elks rites accorded. Visitation will be held for 2 hours prior to that service. Burial will be private. Memorial donations may be made in Jim's name to the Pana Community Hospital Foundation or to Pana Sports Boosters Club. Ernest Lane Kimmel, 70, of Shelbyville, Illinois, passed away peacefully at 9:56 a.m. Sunday, March 20th, at his home. In keeping with Ernie's wishes, there will not be any services. Memorial donations may be made to the American Cancer Society. Arrangements are being handled by Howan Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville. Judith A. Rob Norton, 75 years old, passed away on March 17th at home with her family by her side in Monticello. A memorial service will be held at a later date. The family is being served by the Mackie Wright Funeral Home. Ronald David Short, 55, of Sullivan, passed away at 6:15 p.m. on Sunday, March 20th, at St. John's Hospital in Springfield. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, that's tomorrow, March 25th, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Visitation will be held this evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be in Green Hill Cemetery in Sullivan. Memorial donations in his name may be made to the American Lung Association. We're turning now to the opinion page of the Decatur Herald and Review and begin with their opinion as it appears in our views and editorial. Fiber network is a necessary city investment. Communities have always needed solid infrastructure in order to compete for jobs and residents. For decades, that infrastructure consisted primarily of roads, sewers, water pipes, and electrical capacity. In the future, which may already be here, that infrastructure will include enhanced broadband access. That's why it's important that the Decatur City Council is discussing the next step in expanding the city's fiber network. That has been identified as one of the council's top priorities. A fiber network, in simple terms, is a band of wires that allows high-speed internet access. The city installed its own fiber backbone along Martin Luther King Jr. Drive in 2014, and that connects all of the city facilities. The next step would be to connect that fiber system with Richland Community College, which is linked to the rest of the state through the Illinois Century Network. Eventually, officials want to develop a loop around the city. The development of a network would do much more than allow Candy Crush addicts to play at a faster speed. It would be attractive to a variety of businesses and companies looking to relocate or expand in Decatur. Having high-speed, high-capacity access would undoubtedly be a strong selling point. The next step in the project is expected to cost about $700,000. One possible way to finance the effort would be to pre-lease the service to internet providers. Those providers could then begin to provide high-speed internet service to homes and businesses. Ryan McCrady, president of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, said that fiber is a must-have, that it is very important to businesses. He said it would be a good economic development recruitment and retention tool. Although the council didn't take any formal action Monday night, it did seem to express a willingness to go ahead with the concept. The next step in the process could be approved at a meeting within the next several weeks, and the fiber network could be expanded during the summer construction season. It's no secret that money is tight in government these days, but this is an investment that needs to be made. A fiber network would add to the area's attractiveness and would mesh well with the opportunities presented by the Midwest Inland Port. The idea of a fiber network has been discussed for a while, but was delayed because of leadership transitions at the city and at the EDC. The time to act is here, and it's encouraging that the council is putting this improvement near the top of its agenda. We'd encourage the city to move ahead as soon as prudently possible. And now for the views of the people. This is a letter to the editor of the Decatur Herald and Review, signed by Don Perry of Decatur. It carries the headline, "New University Would Make City Great Again." I have received no less than 1 million worldwide notices of concern from people who care about Decatur. There are three competing cities wanting to beat Decatur's effort to achieve a winning economy: Springfield, Champaign, and Bloomington. We can make Decatur great again. Here's how. Perry University. This newly formed college is designed to train graduate students how to win. When a student graduates and applies this new attitude, Decatur's path will change. Training at Perry University is 10 days long and only costs $10,000 for tuition. Some of the studies include 1. How to answer reporters' questions with an unrelated question and cleverly avoid a quality answer. 2. How to use gutter language to intimidate competitors or challenges. 3. Technique on making faces like a clown in order to distract attention. 4. How and when to refuse an explanation by declaring this is an intrinsic plan to be revealed only when surprising and sneaking up on an opponent. 5. In public speeches, spend 45 minutes criticizing your competitors and only 5 minutes telling of your activities. Or spend 45 minutes telling of your activities and 5 minutes complimenting your competitors. And 6, how to be mendacious with an honest face, no compunction, and on any subject. Many people have moved out of Decatur, so I am told. This loss has been a handicap to our growth, stability, and tax revenue. This exodus can be reversed. My solution, build a fence around Decatur and not allow anyone to leave. Then tell Springfield they can keep the capital if they pay for the fence. That is a great negotiation technique to be learned at Perry University. I just hope no one takes this letter too seriously. But seriously, I know Decatur's governmental body will continue making Decatur great. Phew, signed by Don Perry of Decatur. We now pick up a national columnist whose name I cannot read, I'm sorry. His column is headlined, "Party is Over for the GOP. Nominating Donald Trump will wreck the Republican Party as we know it. Not nominating Trump will wreck the Republican Party as we know it. The sooner everyone recognizes this fact, the better. Denial has been Trump's greatest ally. Republicans and commentators didn't believe he would run. They didn't believe he would be an attractive candidate to rational people, no matter how angry with the establishment voters said they were. They, which includes me, were wrong. The denial lasted longer for some than for others. Long after many observers had come to the realization that Trump was the front runner, Jeb Bush's super PAC, Right to Rise, believed Bush's real rival was Marco Rubio. It spent $35 million trying to to destroy Rubio before it dropped its first $25,000 attacking Trump. Over the weekend, Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus showed the first public signs of acceptance about what's in store for the party. He finally acknowledged that the Republican nominee was probably going to be determined on the convention floor in Cleveland. Priebus explained rightly that the rules are the rules, and that if Trump can't secure the required 1,237 delegates before Cleveland, it's anyone's game. This is a delegate-driven process, he told CNN's Dana Bash. The majority of delegates doesn't rule for the majority. The minority of delegates doesn't rule for the majority. Trump's response to this floor fight talk was to vomit up the usual word salad. All I can say is this, I don't know what's going to happen, Trump told ABC's this week, but I will say this, you're going to have a lot of very unhappy people if I'm denied the nomination, and I think, frankly, for the Republicans to disenfranchise all those people, because if that happens, they're not voting and the Republicans lose. Even through the syntactical fog, Trump's point is clear. If he can't reach 1,237, he should get the nomination anyway, because he is Trump. If that doesn't happen, his supporters will stay home, defect from the party, riot, or all three. And he's right, not about deserving the nomination, even if he doesn't have the delegates. That's typical Trumpian whining. But he's right that if he's denied the nomination, many, not all, but many of his supporters will bolt from the convention and the party. Left out of Trump's unsubtle threat, many anti-Trump Republicans will desert the convention and the party if he's not denied the nomination. There are only three possible ways to avoid a calamitous walkout. Ted Cruz can win the nomination outright before the convention. That's very unlikely, given that he'd need to win roughly 80% of all the remaining delegates. Second, Trump could reveal he has a hidden reservoir of magnanimity and patriotism and will rally his faithful to the consensus nominee. Okay, stop laughing. Third, the delegates could pick someone sufficiently attractive that Trump followers get over their understandable bitterness and support that candidate despite Trump's objections. Who would that be? Certainly not Mitt Romney. Maybe a reanimated Ronald Reagan or Batman? I have no idea. All of these scenarios are so unlikely in part because the split in the GOP isn't merely about a single personality. Trump represents just the most pronounced of a spider web of ideological and demographic fault lines that are increasingly difficult to paper over. As Joel Kotkin put in a column for the Orange County Register, the Republican Party now, quote, consists of interest groups that so broadly dislike each other that they share little common ground, end quote. Put simply, and with the incessant and obtuse comparisons of Trump to Reagan notwithstanding, you cannot have a party that's both Reaganite and Trumpish. Trump's cheerleaders insist that he's a symptom of long simmering maladies on the right. I'm persuaded, even though I think Dr. Trump's remedies are nothing but snake oil. Even now, too many GOP leaders think Trump's success is purely a result of his brash personality and nothing more. But only when we accept that a terrible diagnosis is real is it possible to think intelligently about our options. To wit, this ends in tears, no matter what. Get over it and pick a side. I'm turning now back to the local section of the Decatur Herald and Review and picking up some of the local briefs for today. Our first one is from Charleston, EIU faculty salaries. EIU UPI Eastern Illinois University's faculty union voted Monday and Tuesday to accept the UPI leadership's proposal for a salary deferral plan to garner more than $2 million for the university to make payroll until the end of the fiscal year. This magnanimous gesture to voluntarily defer a significant percentage of our salary to provide President Glassman the cash he requested demonstrates our commitment to our students and our institution. We have every hope that he will accept our helping hand, said Jonathan Blitz, EIU-UPI president. Eastern President David Glassman then accepted UPI's plan. UPI members accepted this proposal after the recent rejection by the union of the Eastern administration's previous plan, which included salary reductions instead of deferrals, saying they would hit lower income earners harder. When state appropriations do come in, for every dollar Eastern gets, UPI gets a dollar to repay the deferrals. Fuller Urban Gardens, the family and church of the late Emma B. Fuller, will break ground on Friday, that's tomorrow, March 25th, on a new urban gardening ministry designed to keep her memory alive and nurture the neighborhood. Food, music, and old-fashioned games will be provided as grandson Titian Bond tills up the first garden at 455 West Packard Street, starting at 4:30 p.m. His mother, Evangelist Brendel Hyrese Fuller of God's House of Refuge, recently bought the land and was approached by niece Tamara Fuller, president of the Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, about using it to start Emma Urban Gardens. God's House of Refuge and the Chamber are co-sponsoring the event with the family. To help or for more information, call Tamara Fuller at 217-572-5272. That was 217-572-5272. And more than 35 health providers will offer screenings and information at the Soylent Access for Independent Living Health Fair on Wednesday, March 30th in Shelbyville. The fair will be held from 9 until 11:30 a.m. at Shelby Christian Church, 200 North Hickory Street. The Lions Club Diabetic retinopathy screening and hearing vans will also be on site. For more information, contact Betty Watkins, SAIL, that's SAIL, all caps, Rural Outreach Coordinator at 217-774-4322. Okay, we're out of time for news from the Decatur area for Thursday, March 24th. This has been Ruth McCauley reading with you this morning. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something new today and more about your community in Decatur. I'll be reading with you again next week. And until then, y'all take care.